Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Hello and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH and 96.5 TIC. Our guest today is former Republican State Representative Pam Sawyer. We're going to be talking about the baby safe haven law. She's retired from the legislature, but even after all these years, she still goes back from time to time to address issues like this. Pam, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I always loved listening to you and talking when you have a minute.
Well, I am glad that we've got 24 minutes then to talk today. And we'll start off here. We're focusing our conversation on baby safe haven. How did you first learn about this issue? You're a state rep in Bolton. What is that, Pam?
It is a piece of legislation that was passed in 2000 that is such amazing good public policy that it saves lives. What it does is allow for someone, a mother or an agent of some form or another, to bring in a newborn under 30 days of age to an emergency room and not be prosecuted for abandonment or worse. The Baby Safe Haven Law has been actually something that's been adopted, started in Texas, and we picked it up in 99. We picked it up in 2000, and so did most of the other 48 states, and the territories as well.
How did you first become aware of this issue? If you could take us back to 1999, which seems like a different world, but if you could take us back to 1999, how did this issue reach you in Bolton?
There was a story from 1988, back when we read newspapers, and I can even remember what side of the page it was on, and it referred to a story of a baby that had been frozen, abandoned, under a tree beside a parking lot, a newborn. And it rocked me to my core. I was a fairly new mother, and I couldn't understand someone leaving their child. What is happening? And you think about when someone is in such great distress that they cannot manage. They just cannot. Things happen, and not always for the good. So this baby was in Meriden. It was January. It was very cold. And the mother actually called the police department and said, there's something out in the parking lot. They looked in the parking lot, but did not look under the trees on the edges of the parking lot. So no one found the infant while it was still alive. It was a newborn baby boy, and it rocked the police department. It rocked the community, and the story became statewide. The community then went and got meetings going. The communities of faith named the baby David Paul. There was someone who donated a baby casket and someone who donated a grave in Meriden. It was so impactful that on January 2nd to this year, the police department go out and pay their respects at the graveside of David Paul. That was a story that just took my breath away, and I didn't forget it. So I had gotten elected to the legislature, and everything's swirling around, budgets and electric issues, no surprise there either, energy issues, education issues, safety issues. And one day, reading again, I caught an article that said Texas had created a safe haven law, and it was to allow someone to bring in a newborn and turn the baby in. That just brought this story back from 1988 and hit me upside the head, and I said, we have to do it. If we do nothing else this year for a legislative package, we need to be able to make the situation so easy and obvious for someone who is obviously at childbirth, and that is a very dramatic, stressful, impactful time, who cannot handle the situation for whatever reason, an option, a good option, not an option that puts a baby in a dumpster, not an option that leaves a baby by somebody's mailbox, but it was a good option and a healthy option for not only the child, but also for the mother, if it is that person who turns in the baby.
So many questions here. You know, obviously you're emotional, you're behind this and the idea of doing this Baby Safe Haven and bringing it to the legislature after the similar measure in Texas, as you explained. Could you walk us through what the process was like in convincing other lawmakers in the state that this is something that ought to be done? Or perhaps they were on board with you and you didn't have to do much convincing, but what was that process like?
There were actually 11 of us that submitted the bill. I think it was because it was seen, the article was seen in Hartford Current, and people read it. So 11 of us actually put in individual bills at that time of the year when you're supposed to submit your proposals. And it had a life that developed through the Children's Committee, which at the time, Representative Ann Dandreau was the legislator who was the ranking member in that committee, and she took the reins. And then it was a process of negotiation because it was a whole new thought process. Some people thought this could lead to baby dumping, that if you didn't want your kid, you just dumped it off. And they were chilled by that thought. So it took a lot of convincing and conversation and discussion between women and men that the process of childbirth, if you were all alone, frightened, and have nowhere to go, is a very real possibility. The sex trafficking situation is a very real possibility. And what we knew was there had been other cases where there had been abandonments. So you don't want that when there's a solid option of having someone be able to turn it in. Well, what does that need to be as a model? Well, we had discussions on anonymity for the mother. It had discussions on age restriction for the infant, so it came out to be under 30 days. And the discussion came out to be where could they drop off a baby? Well, some people were talking about, how about police departments? How about fire departments? And I put my foot down and I said, no, because we have 100 out of 169 towns that are small and may have a volunteer fire department that doesn't have people on duty 24/7. It's not like in the big city where they have someone at the firehouse at all times. So you can't make one size fits all. The other thought process was, how about the police station? Well, the small towns do not have a police station. They have a resident state trooper, perhaps. And they have an office that is manned for 15 hours, 16 hours a day, not 24, and they share their resident state troopers. So it had to have, I thought, and I was very adamant, a simple solution, one solution, so that people knew what it was. Take it to an emergency room. At that time, they weren't called emergency departments, they were called emergency rooms. Take it to an emergency room that's open 24 hours and make the law simple.
That is quite the process. You know, Pam, what I'm thinking about here, what you had to go through, the negotiations, the discussions. People are behind this one way or another, but you have to negotiate it and discuss it. It seems like any kind of bill that deals with human life at any stage in life, and certainly there have been some controversies lately about vaccines, for instance, or the aid in dying law. But this is a very different kind of law, but still deals with human life. So I'm also, in a way, I'm surprised it took a whole lot of negotiation, but in a way, I'm not at the same time. Is that kind of your experience? Am I understanding you right on that?
It is. And you have to remember that there are 151 members of the House that all come with their own private experiences, and their hometowns are all different. They just mostly. And then you have 36 senators, and they have the same situation where they come from different backgrounds, different areas where they live, and there's some crossover, but no two are alike. So they all come with opinions. They all come with ideas. And when you throw something new at them, they have to ruminate on it for a bit. And they're used to being listened to. They got elected. They have the committee assignments, or they're outside that committee and still find the issue very important to them and have something to say. So negotiations is a very big part of it, plus all the committee hearings and the votes that are taken and the possibility of rewrite as it's brought forward to a chamber, the House or the Senate first, and then it has to go to the opposite one. And there's a third leg of the stool, and that is the governor would have veto power or will sign the bill into law.
That is quite the process, and you summed it up so well. At the time, were Republicans in the majority or the minority?
In the minority.
Were they ever in the majority while you served?
They were not.
Interesting. So you're a Republican from a pretty small town and district in the state, Bolton, and you found a way to come up with some kind of a bipartisan issue that could get support from the majority.
This truly was bipartisan. It had, I think, a very strong female interest. And at that time in the legislature, there were about a third of the members were females. So the discussions there were easier to have than the males, the gentlemen who just didn't have the same background or experience. Many of the women were mothers themselves or grandmothers or had done childcare. And so it was an easier lift. And so it was an interesting, not only was it bipartisan, but there was a push from the Women's Caucus to have this supported and have it passed.
Pam Sawyer is my guest on Face Connecticut. If you're just joining us, she is a former state representative, a Republican from Bolton. We're talking about the baby safe haven law, which she still backs and just recently was at the state capitol to support it. Another key component, other than the political side of it, of course, is the hospitals. How did you get their cooperation for the emergency rooms or emergency departments, as they're now referred to?
That was probably the easiest part. Their job is to save lives. They were all on board very quickly. There's the Connecticut Hospital Association, which is a fabulous organization that has member hospitals and have their pulse on the different ones. And so the Connecticut Hospital Association has been a major advocate of this. Now, we did this great law, and we were very excited when we got it passed, you know, in 2000. And then we had a mistake made, a big mistake. And it took us a few years to be awoken to what we had done. We passed this great law. We forgot to tell people about it. And oh, the people that needed to know, how do you get the word out? to that fragile population that is in need to have to make a decision what to do. So we had the frightening situation in 2001 in which two babies were abandoned, one in Greenwich and one in Brookfield. One was it by someone's mailbox. And then the most recent baby abandonment then was in Groton in 2006. The babies did survive. Two were adopted, and others live with their relatives. So we had a wake-up call, and I jumped on board at the time, still a legislator, and said, hey, we need some money. Doesn't that sound like a legislator talking? We need some money to advertise, to do public service announcements, to get people on board, to make ring the bell and say, we have an option here for people. So blessed at the time, a woman was governor, M. Jody Rell, and she worked with, I was able to obtain $50,000 for communication money to be put into DCF's budget just for this. And the governor agreed, and they asked her to actually do PSAs, which are public service announcements in your world, on radio. And they did a TV spot, and they created pamphlets and flyers for doctor's offices, school nurses' offices, other places that we could think to put them. And it was very successful. And there was a jump up of babies who were brought in for Baby Safe Haven around 2006. And you could tell the spikes where babies have been brought in, where there have been the word put out by God Bless You in the media, who sing the song and help us share the tale that there is an option for people.
Let's fast forward a little bit to today. Where is Baby Safe Haven today, and what brought you back to the Capitol now that you're retired? Most people would probably stay away, but you go back.
Partly it's the warmth and joy that I feel that there is a piece of legislation that saves not one life, but two. It saves a baby. It saves a mother or other person from being prosecuted. And it also adds a very special piece to an adoptive family who takes in a child for whatever reason they are into having the need, want, or desire to adopt. So it's such a win-win-win proposition. It brings me back when we can talk about it as often as we can. We created in 2015 Baby Safe Haven Day, which is April 4th. It's also National Child Abuse Prevention Month. So it fits into that scale as well. And we have the advantage of having supportive media at the Capitol and other places who want to hear the story. This year, last year was the 25th anniversary, but this year we scheduled this because it's April, and a baby had been left off at Yale New Haven Hospital, and it was a baby boy, and all things were going well. See, these babies go into pre-approved adoptive homes. Their health is checked. The mother's health is checked and taken care of at no charge if that is the need, and they don't have to answer any question. We say that there's no blame, no shame, and you don't have to answer any questions. So we're standing at the press conference yesterday and having this glowing moment, and it's bipartisan. It's public and private, so the Connecticut Hospital Association is there. We had private citizens. We had an author, Doug Hood, who wrote about another issue regarding this tangential issue. And the commissioner has a big grin on her face, Commissioner Hamilton. She has this big grin on her face. And I said, what? She said, we had a baby brought in last night to the Yukon John Dempsey Hospital. So we had another baby saved. And it just is precious to me. So it's worth it. So the positive note is since the year 2000, we now have had just this month the 59th and the 60th baby brought in under the safe haven law.
Pam, I think it's important to note that in this day and age, we tend to only hear about the controversies. And I guess even at that time in the press, the only things that often made the news were the controversies, difficult budgets, difficult bills, long debates, those kinds of things. Yet this is an example of something that was also controversial in a way, and something good came of it that is still being recognized in 2026. How does that make you feel?
So there, well, it's a part of my fabric, I guess, is a good description now, and part of the journey that I've been under as a mom, a legislator, first select woman, retiree, a grandmother, that it's precious, children are precious, and they are our future. One of the things we know is people age out of the need to know this. They're going on with their lives, they're married, they are working, they understand birth control, and when to use it and when not to use it, and so on and so forth. And but you still do have the problem of the younger people coming up, and they may not have heard about the safe haven law. How do you keep that going? Well, it's things like this. When you have me on the show, we talk about it. And we have other media outlets. We have social media as well, and trying to get it out there. But it's not always a real sexy topic. So we passed another law that said it's to be taught. The law is to be taught in the public school system. If they're teaching sex ed, there should be another thought process that someone may be able to help someone who is in distress by sharing the law. It can be so easy to talk about. It can be shared on a school bus or on the walk home from school.
Pam, this has been incredible and quite an education in something that has, is, and will continue to make a difference. In our final moment, what would you like listeners to know in a nutshell about Baby Safe Haven?
But there's an ask. You've heard the story. You understand it's a simple law. People can go to take an infant to the hospital. They'll be given a matching wrist bracelet. They don't have to leave their name. But if they change their mind in 30 days, they can go back and start a reunification process, which has happened in a couple instances. Please share the law. I ask, tell two people about it. Have you heard about the Safe Haven law? Perhaps they've seen the signs under the hospital signs where the baby is outlined, the baby head is outlined, and then the cup of a hand. That's because that's a place, a safe haven, to bring a newborn if you cannot manage on your own.
Pam, I appreciate your coming on Face Connecticut.
Oh, my honor.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.